Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to do something a little bit different for one of our last shows of the year. We're going to have for you a few of our best voicemails. We've got multiple segments of our best voicemails. But first, if you haven't heard, it's part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from business.
Hi, Bill Bostock here from Business Insider. The United Arab Emirates said last week that it was moving to a 4.5-day work week from next year. The current weekend in the UAE runs from Thursday night to Saturday night, but the new weekend will start at 12 p.m. on Friday, finishing at nighttime on Sunday. The government said that it hopes this will boost productivity and improve work-life balance for employees. It also said that it would bring cities like Abu Dhabi and Dubai in line with other major financial centres, such as London, Paris and Munich, which work on a sort of Monday to Friday timescale. The idea of a 4-day or 4.5-day working week has been floated by experts and business leaders as potentially being beneficial for companies. While no country has adopted it yet, a number of them are taking steps to work out whether it's worthwhile. Iceland, Ireland, Scotland, Spain and Japan, for example. Some of those countries have conducted studies which have revealed that there may be benefits to working a 4-day week.
Yeah, I firmly believe there may be benefits to working a 4-day week, but I feel like for the kind of jobs they're talking about with like financial sector and everything else, the job is done when it's done, right? Like this idea of, hey, you know, I didn't do any work because we only work 4 days. Why didn't it get finished? Because we now have a 4-day work week. That ain't gonna work. Like, that's not really how most of this kind of stuff goes. Like, I think what we've seen with some of the work flexibility that has come up in the pandemic is that we see this kind of go in both directions. But the moral of the story is the job gets done when the job gets done, right? Like, people don't have to go to offices as much to get the job done. And it's cool because the job gets done. So they can tell you your work week is 4 days. They can tell you that. Like, that matters if you're working at Mickey D's. You know what I'm saying? You only got to come ring in a few shifts. It'll go there for you, but at another level of this, you just do the job till the job is finished, period. Like, that's what I think anytime I see these. I worked at a company about 20 years ago that had gone to summer Fridays, right, where everybody got off work Friday at noon, and it was cool because you got to go home at noon on Friday. It ain't really have nothing to do with Monday through Thursday, and just because you could go home on Friday didn't mean that you did.
If you don't get it done, then there's going to be questions as to why you didn't get it done. Right.
Yeah, you have 4.5 days.
I think to a certain degree, if it's like a time zone thing, where like at that point in time of the day, everyone else is off in other areas of the world. But technically, the other business centers that he named, like Paris and London and New York and so on, they're still on at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still sending emails.
Yes.
My brother works for a company that's based in a different area of the world. And so he'll say that it's really difficult sometimes to get work done later in the week, because by the time he's sending emails and stuff for work to get done late in the week, it's already Friday night.
Right.
Where everyone else is.
Yeah. Like you and I live on different time zones right now. Sometimes that really sucks for you because the work has to get done.
That's right. But you do what you got to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's greatly appreciated, but it's what it is.
All right. This next one also comes from business. Here it is.
Hi, my name is Gwen Aviles from Insider. You've probably heard of the Great Resignation, the phenomenon where people across industries are quitting their jobs en masse for better working conditions and opportunities. Coverage of this phenomenon has been everywhere, and rightfully so. This is a historic moment where workers are advocating for themselves in ways they haven't been able to advocate for themselves before. As I started seeing story after story on the Great Resignation, I began to wonder, who exactly are the people quitting their jobs? I spoke to people and found that although this movement is unprecedented, it's not all-inclusive, and thousands of people, many of whom are people of color, can't leverage the current moment. Among the people I spoke with was a social worker who's burned out, but has to keep working to pay her son's medical bills. And an engineer who's been laid off twice since the pandemic began. And although he's taken a significant pay cut in his current role, he can't imagine quitting because he feels so lucky to be employed in the first place. People of color also aren't quitting their jobs for cultural reasons. One woman I spoke with is struggling with her mental health, but feels a sense of responsibility to stay in her job because less than 2% of lawyers are Black women. From vaccine access to high unemployment rates, the pandemic has revealed and exacerbated existing inequalities for people of color. This story is an attempt to look beyond a one-dimensional portrayal of the Great Resignation and highlight the perspective of workers from marginalized backgrounds.
Yeah, look, man, I'm just going to quit my job is the ultimate form of privilege. Like, when you really think about it, unless you're just at a point of just supreme frustration and this is like legitimately making your life worse and everything else. But still, you got to have bread to make that call. Like, every time I have all kinds of times, like every time I sign a new contract, I'm like, when am I not going to have to work no more? Not that I'm going to necessarily stop working, but when can I maybe not have to work anymore or not have to do anything that I don't want to do? And you know why I can raise those questions? Because I make a lot of money. That's why. That is the only reason why I can ask those questions. When I was freelancing, I was never sitting around like, man, I just can't wait till I quit and take some time. No, doesn't go that way. I don't have kids. I don't have all that kind of stuff. You understand what I'm saying? For you to be able to just be like, I am tired of the way they are treating me. I am going to quit. And where are you going to work? I don't care. I'm just, no. Like, you got to be in a great situation there. Now, we are also in an interesting situation right now where there are more available jobs than people who want them. And so if you make that call, you might be able to feel pretty good about the fact that you can go get another job. But to me, that ain't really in line with this great resignation that we're talking about here. Like, quitting your job to go find another one, that's just what kind of always goes on here. That's what it is. But I did appreciate this story just for the recognition that don't everybody got it where they can just be like, I ain't gonna work no more. That's not it. I always talk about my path and where I've gotten. And a significant part of that was that in the early years of me trying to make this media thing work, I could ask my parents for money. Like, I wasn't on their payroll, right? Like, it wasn't like they were sending me $2,000 every month. But hey, man, sometimes might be coming up about $500 short on what was necessary to get done. I had the luxury and privilege of having access to that $500. A lot of this great resignation stuff, just tell me how many of them can get money from their parents. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not judging them for being able to do that, obviously. But you got to acknowledge it when you tell your stories, right? It's like, hey, when people, them up from the bottom stories, and folks be like, yeah, I came up and I started in the mailroom. How'd you get the job in the mailroom? Oh, well, you know, my father's a CEO. Thanks.
Exactly. And it's the same thing that you've talked about before with college as well, where it's like, oh, I didn't need financial aid. It's like, oh, well, who's paying for when you went out for dinner on Fridays? Who was paying for that little trip down to the coast that yes. you did with your buddies over Thanksgiving break? Mom?
Right.
Dad?
Car insurance, right? Like, car insurance. I was on my parents' insurance through college. I don't think I got off their insurance until I was like 30 years old. Cause I was like, I ain't bringing it up until they do. You know what I mean? Like that was, but that's a thing, you know, like every car I had until my early 30s was a hand-me-down car from my parents. Right. Like, so it wasn't like I was like, yo, let's go to the lot and get something new. But even the luxury of being able to do that.
Being on your parents' health insurance.
Yes.
Sometimes your parents paying for your cell phone.
Yep. These are things that people, I don't know how many people who live that life, because most of their friends also live that life, realize, like, I was in high school with people like, yo, 14, 15 years old, like, I'm going to work. And I'm like, you're going to work? They're like, yeah, I got to stack money for a car and insurance. Oh, okay. And by the way, they weren't keeping all the money.
Paycheck to paycheck.
Exactly.
All right. So this last one comes from tech.
Hi, I'm Steve Zajcik with the Washington Post. If you thought that latest search engine ad was a little bit too insidious, or perhaps that highway billboard loomed a little too large, well, Madison Avenue has got a thought for you. A whole new wave of advertising has come up. It's called 3D or anamorphic advertising, and you've got companies like Ocean Outdoor and Amplify out of the UK and a growing number of firms right here in the US that are trying it. This is basically a form of advertising in which the billboard, instead of just sitting up there unobtrusively looking down at you, it actually steps out at you. Characters, celebrity spokespeople, brand logos, they start flying and tumbling and even lunging. Want to try the new cell phone plan? Well, maybe the celebrity athlete spokesperson is bursting out of the billboard, suggesting what plan you might want to try, or new streaming show. Amazon's got one right now called Wheel of Time, in which the characters swoop out their hands and lunge at passersby. Now, Madison Avenue loves this idea because recall level is considered three times as high, or almost three times as high, compared to traditional billboard advertising. And on some level, a lot of consumers might like it too. It turns our regular public spaces into digital play spaces. On the other hand, there are a lot of critics who say, well, wait a second. If we're already dodging people walking down the street who are looking down at their phones, now we have to dodge all the branded three-dimensional characters who are trying to catch our attention while we look at our phones. It's a cool new idea, experimental notion, or one more way our public spaces are getting a little bit noisier. Well, we'll be able to decide pretty soon. This anamorphic advertising is only getting bigger.
Hey, man, this is all I'm saying here about this. I need some warning before this happens. Personally, like if I'm going to be, thank you for putting this story out in case I ever go to London and it's some damn 3D advertisement and I am a little bit less than sober and I have no idea what in the world is directly in front of me, right? So this is interesting again, and the idea of invading public space, right? Like, you know, how, like, do we need this level of interactivity? Is this actually going to make people want to buy the things that they're pushing anymore? Like, is there any gain to it? Whatever. I'm just trying to imagine how shook I would be if out of nowhere a 3D advertisement just started playing. Like, can you imagine, Gabe, if them ads that run between Sudoku games all of a sudden jumped out of your screen and were like in your living room? I ain't asked you for that.
Yeah, I was trying to think, like, because you're talking about invasion of public space. People go to Times Square willingly. Going to this overstimulating experience of advertising. And yes, it's only going to get worse.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, Times Square got to have more popo per capita than any place in the United States of America. They must. There is so much popo around there. Like, you know, somebody got killed during the pandemic around Times Square. And then they sent Mo Popo there. And I'm like, yo, your problem was not a lack of popo under that circumstance. Y'all got all of it. They not trying to have nothing. Like, if Al-Qaeda would have come back and tried to make something happen in New York, it ain't happening in Times Square. Like, they picked a few locations. They're like, nah, you ain't going to do this. You ain't about to blow up no Brooklyn Bridge. And like, Harlem, hey, you might have a chance. But ain't nothing going to happen to you at all. Like, nothing going to happen to the Times Square in a big old macro sort of sense. But I'm trying to imagine if I was just walking down Times Square and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Nick Saban and Deion Sanders jump off a billboard and start doing that Aflac commercial on the street in front of me. Deion putting on, oh, man, I'd be out of my, I don't know what I would do. The only 3D movie I think I've seen in the theater was the last Harold and Kumar movie. I guess the Harold and Kumar Christmas movie. And I was like, hey, man, I thought these movies were about weed. These dudes are doing a lot of cocaine here in 3D. I don't want that at all.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So this is an old favorite of the podcast. Every time you put out this voicemail prompt, the voicemail box gets absolutely flooded with voicemails. What made you think of why'd you quit football this week?
Because it fills the voicemail box up every time. The people love it. I mean, the season was over, you know, so we could talk about that, but the people love it. I did it for y'all.
There you go. So we got a bunch of good ones, obviously. Our first one comes from Daniel in Lafayette.
My freshman year in high school,
I broke my arm. I got my arm smashed between two football helmets. And we was playing the Crosstown Rival. This is my freshman year. It's freshman football. Well, I can't play. I'm in the cast, so I'm just walking around before the game with my jersey on. One of the other guys got sick. He had the flu. And coach walked up to me and asked me if my arm was that hurt, if I could play. But the problem is, coach asked me that in front of my mom, bro. I'm standing there with my arm in a cast. Just had pins put in that thing like 2 weeks before. And he walked up and asked me if I can play defensive line in front of my mom. So, if my mom's face didn't turn red as a cayenne, dog, man, my mom didn't even, she looked like she was about to curse him like a dog. But she just told me, take off the jersey, grabbed it out of my hand, said, here's your little jersey. And we walked off, bro. That was the last time I ever spoke to that coach again and thought about getting on a football field. I went to wrestling after that.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I can't build all that. The audacity. Like when I graduated from high school, we graduated on a Saturday. I took the next day off from work, obviously. And my brother told me, I worked at Fun Ruckers. And my brother told me that the manager called that Sunday and was like, hey, we're a little short. We were wondering if, we're looking for Bomani. And they're like, well, he's not here. Okay. You know, if he get here? Well, no, he didn't come home last night. All right. Well, we're a little short. So we were just wondering if he could come in. And my brother said, well, Bo graduated last night. I don't think he'll be rucking any FUDs for you guys today. I think he also told him, I don't think he'll be fun rucking on the first. I never worked another day, by the way.
Asking someone to work, you know, and come in, you're sick. I know you're sick. But show a commitment to the game. That is the absolute test of your commitment to the game.
You're not getting me to come in the day after graduation. That's different. At that time in life, I appreciate the opportunity to make an extra $4.80 an hour, but no.
Oh, my gosh. This next guy, he didn't leave his name, but he's from Bakersfield.
Hey, Bo, so this is the story of one of my friends quitting football. So this dude was really, really fast. He ran a 200 to 400, and he was the man, right, for track. So, of course, the football coach tried to get him out there. He told him he didn't want to play. They was like, man, we're not going to let you get hurt. We put you on a kickoff return. You'll be good. So very first time he gets a kickoff return, 99 yards to the house, right? So he's feeling good. Then they say, okay, well, let's put you on the punt return. So second quarter come up. He off the field the whole rest of the time until the second quarter. So second quarter, he get a punt return. I guess he don't know that he posed a fair catch. This is a strictly track dude, right? So he gets hit so hard. Bo, he just takes off his pads, literally, on the middle of the field, carries his helmet and pads to the coach, drops them, goes to the locker room. By the time we got out of line to get our Frito boats, this high school, to get our Frito boats, he was sitting up there behind us during the whole third quarter. Yep, we knew right then, track is the only sport film. Thank you, Bo.
Hold up. The most interesting part of this story is he said a Frito boat. Is that what y'all call a Frito pie down there? Gabe, you know about Frito pie?
I've heard of it. I've never had one.
I never heard of a Frito boat. I mean, a Frito pie is just Frito chili and cheese. Like, I'm not going to pretend as though, like, it's some advanced sort of situation. But I did not know that anybody had Frito pies anywhere except for Texas. When I went back to my old high school for reunion in 2017, I rolled past the Sonic, and the Sonic had a sign that said Frito Pie is back. And I was like, baby, who said Frito Pie ever left? Have things changed this much since I departed?
Well, Bakersfield is kind of Texas adjacent.
That's fair.
Literally from Bakersfield to Gilroy.
Fair point. Fair point.
Did he or did he not talk about having Frito pies in the middle of a game?
No. It sounds like he was in the stands. They were in the stands, and then in the third quarter, now old buddy was in the stands. He quit right then.
Here's your little helmet. Here's your little pads.
Yes.
This last one is a different level. This guy was from Oregon, didn't leave his name.
The last time I played tackle football was about 20 years ago. when I was in the seventh grade. I grew up in a small town in southern Oregon, the type of place where playing football is connected with your manhood. I'm sure you know those kinds of places being from Texas. So I was afraid to try out because I didn't want to get hit. But my dad said he would pay me $50 if I went and just tried out. So I go out for tryouts, and the first week of pads, the coach puts me in at linebacker. Well, they call a run play up the middle, and I'm late to the pile because, again, I didn't want to get hit. Well, I'm standing there with one leg in the middle of the pile, and a D lineman slams his helmet right into the side of my knee. And I go to the ground immediately, screaming in pain. Well, I dislocated my kneecap. So the coaches, including my dad, are all standing around me, wondering what they should do next. And the head coach suggests they put me in the bed of his pickup truck and drive me to the nearest hospital. Thankfully, that did not happen. They called an ambulance. But damn it if I've never let my dad forget that that was all his fault. I was out there in the first place. I'll stick to flag football from now on.
For 50 bucks. I tell you this, the most horrific injury I've ever seen. Dude, I went to school with in middle school. We was out playing football, and he broke his leg. I've never heard anybody scream like this before. And you know how, like, when you lay down, your feet go to, like, opposite sides? His were going the same way, right? And so finally his dad got there. It took him forever because, again, this is 1992 or 3 or something like that. Getting a hold of people is not nearly as easy as it is now, you know? And so his dad finally got there. His dad looked down and was like, all right, cool. Well, I guess I just put him in the bed of the truck. And they're like, sir, we're going to need to call an ambulance.
The pickup truck is, like, way too common of a theme in childhood injuries.
Well, because the problem is, a man with a pickup truck is likely a man who does things himself. It's a DIY situation. It's like, why do you think I have this truck? Just in case I got to take somebody to the hospital.
Just throw him in the back of the truck.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
Bo, can you tell the people the inspiration for this week's social segment?
All right, man. You know, just got to thinking about, you know how that goes sometimes in life. You're playing a video game. You're playing Madden. Next thing you know, out of nowhere, you're a blocking tight end, catches a 65-yard pass. Scores a touchdown to win the game, or the other guy's blocking tight end does that, and you like,
man, the game cheating. You know you can't do that in real life. You saw that.
We've all been there. So I figured you would tell us about the times that you've been there.
Were you playing Madden recently?
No, I ain't played video games in forever. I just know what the people do.
Okay. Well, we got a bunch of interesting responses because there are clearly different interpretations of the game cheating. Our first comes from Daniel Sacramento.
I got a story for you about when Madden cheated me. So my boy and I have been friends for about 8 years, and we've been playing Madden just as long. Unfortunately for me, he's been whooping my ass for years. I'd say his win percentage is easily 90% against me. So about a year ago, we played a game, and it was my time to shine. I kept it low scoring, playing ground and pound, doing my thing, and then Madden happened. So my boy gets a TD with about 3 minutes left to cut it to 17-16, and he's going for two to try and take the lead. I see that slant come in, pick the ball, and take it to the house. I'm thinking game's over. I guess Madden didn't know what team I was because the game him the 2 points. Now I'm down 18-17, heated. But I'm thinking, it's fine. It's still my time to shine. I get the ball. I just need a field goal. Wrong. Madden made me kick the ball off to him after he scored a touchdown. He ran out the clock, and I didn't get the ball back. I was devastated. Madden cheated, man. That was the last time we played Madden, too. He says he's beat me every way possible now, so there's no reason to play. I just want my redemption, Bo. I've been training. I'm ready.
Hold up! The kickoff glitched?
Gave the ball to the wrong team.
There's no way I wouldn't have broken that PlayStation.
Yeah, how many have you broken multiple PlayStations in your gaming career?
Never broken a PlayStation, and I don't know how I never broke a controller.
I've broken controllers.
I've dinged controllers, right? Where, you know, they wasn't good as new, but they still worked.
Now, if people break your controllers, are you like, no, you replace that at once?
Yeah, either that or we got to fight.
Yeah.
Like, you have to acknowledge that this has to be fixed or we got to fight.
What's interesting about this one, too, is it's like, no, the game was actually cheating. Like, no, Madden glitched.
Right. I expected, I know, the game actually cheated.
Well, these next two are pretty interesting because they're not video game related, but the game was still cheating. This next one comes from Hawk at Boston.
So about 20 years ago, I played AAU for Flatbush Youth Academy, playing in Coney Island against the Gauchos, and who's on the other team but the man himself, Bassett. Bass and Telfair. Now, we had a pretty good team. His team was all right, but he was, you know, clearly ahead and above everybody. I'm pretty sure he ended that game about 48 points, and he showed up 10 minutes late. But about 1 minute before the end of the game, we're up by 4 points, and they start doing a little bit of hack a shack on our point guard. They think he's not a good free throw shooter, but he's pretty good, about 95%. So he starts hitting these free throws at the line. He makes the first one, then he misses the second. They go down, they score, follow him again. He misses the first two, hits the front rim, boom, boom. And we're both looking, you know, the whole team is like, what is, Woody don't miss like that. He never misses. What's going on? So coach calls timeout. He's like, Woody, what's going on? What you doing, man? What are you doing right here? He's like, listen, coach, you see that guy under the basket? Every time I go up there and shoot that free throw, he put his arms up and he got that thing on him. So we're like, what are you talking about? Go to the free throw line, see if they follow you again, see what happens. They follow him again. Go to the free throw line. We all looking at the guy under the basket. He just, you know, slightly puts his arms up like he's scratching his head, and all we see is that hammer on him. So we all say, yo, we got to get the heck up out of here because the game's cheating. Ain't nobody going to get your shot over Sebastian. So they won the game, and we left with our lives.
What?
A little bit different than the Madden story.
You didn't expect you to get a voicemail like that, did you, Gabe?
No, I did not. And what's dope about the way we set up the voicemails is I get a transcription of what the voicemail is before I actually have to listen to it. So I'm like, no, I got to listen to this.
Oh, that's right. That makes sense. It's Google Voice.
Yes. Very interesting. Oh, very, very interesting. You've got to hear it to believe
it. Yes.
All right. This last one, the guy didn't leave his name. It's a pretty interesting one.
Quicken Lane's ball against Georgia Tech versus Minnesota. I played for Georgia Tech. And one day during practice when we were on Detroit's field, we saw someone out here recording our practice. We knew it was Minnesota. We were like, okay, you know, we're going to talk trash to them, all that. Yeah, we're going to get them. We're going to get them. We approached our coach. We were like, yo, we're going to tell the media. He said, no, we're going to keep it quiet. It's all good. So we go to the game. We talk to trash. Say, yeah, you guys can't beat us. We got this triple option. No one ain't seen a triple option in the Big Ten. And they proceeded to beat the ever-living breaks off of us. It was not fun. Not enjoyable. It was just bad all around. But hey, I'm telling you, Minnesota out here recording people's practices. I promise you that. They recorded last year's bowl game and this year's. Look it up. That's all I'm saying.
Yo, did we just break some news?
This is a different kind of the game cheating.
Yo, they just cheating. What? Yo, Gabe, this is kind of a scandal.
And you're kind of pairing it with the Astros scandal with the game cheating earlier on in the podcast, too.
We should look into this. We got to do some actual work.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. Stimulus dropped this week for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I would imagine there were some dumb purchases already, because I had certainly seen some outlandish claims on Twitter about what people were going to buy with said stimuli checks.
Yes.
So we thought it would be a good idea to reach out to people to see what the dumbest purchase was that they had made with a big check. Not necessarily the stimulus check, as people get big checks from whatever. Our first comes from Clay in Iowa.
I've only got to go back to about a year ago. About this week, I've had my first adult job for about 6 months by that time. I've got enough rent money. A couple weeks later, the first stimulus check comes around. At the same time, my favorite bar in Iowa City closes, so I go online and try to find a little keepsake. Maybe like a beer coaster or a beer mug or something. But I find the disco ball that's been hanging up in the rafters from my favorite bar. I get it. It ends up costing all the first stimulus check plus a couple hundred more bucks. So I'm pretty excited. I go pick it up with me and my buddies. We bring it back to my apartment, and it's about 15 inches too big to fit in my apartment door. So I take it to a storage unit, and it's coming up on about a year since I've had a 10x10 storage unit for just my disco ball.
What? You can't even get it in your house? Wow. Wow. Also, you were going to put a disco ball in your house? And all that tells me is you, sir, are single.
That is the most single guy purchase ever.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that's the singlest. And I don't mean like not married. I mean like girls don't be coming over to your crib.
Or it's one of those things where you buy it and you do it without telling your partner. And you get it home and they're like, well, that's going in the garage.
No, that's not even coming in the house. That's going on eBay. Wow. I can't imagine. Like, here's my thing about it. The place was closing down. Who were you negotiating against? Like, I just don't see how you couldn't get that for $40.
And storage containers aren't exactly cheap. They're usually like $100
a month. No! You got a bill. You went up there and paid for a bill.
You know what? A year of storage container renting may actually equate the cost of a single stimulus check.
Not your finest hour, Clay. At least I'm glad you know it was stupid. Like, that's the best part, is that we told people to tell us about stupid things they've done, so I don't have to be nice to y'all about, like, how I feel about these stupid things that you have done.
It's a safe space. This next one comes from JD in Missouri.
The dumbest thing I ever bought with a big check was a car. So back in around 2010, I got a refund check from college. So I'm like, I'm going to be in this town, so I'm going to get me a ride. So I'm back home, searching the internet, looking for cars, and I found a good price, $2,200 for a Trailblazer. So I went on there and sent the money, Western Union. The car pulled to be delivered about a week later. I'm waiting on the delivery, sitting there waiting. Didn't consult with nobody. That's what you're thinking. I didn't consult not a soul about this. I just went on and did it because I had my own car. And the day it was supposed to be delivered, the person actually hit me up like, hey, the truck stopped. We need another $700. And at that point, I knew I got caught. And I had to tell my whole family about it because it was a big check. They knew I had the money. I knew I was supposed to be getting the car. 12 years later, lived that down. They still make fun of me at least twice a year about that. But it was the last time I lost money on a big transaction.
JD always got something, don't he? JD always got something. I tell you this, though. The warning sign was, send me the money, Western Union.
Yeah.
Like we don't conduct business over Western Union, right? You do people favors via Western Union. You pay off debts via Western Union. You do not buy a car via Western Union. This actually reminds me of my favorite purchase I ever made when I got a big check. I'm really going safe space with y'all, telling y'all this story. Okay. So it was the year 2016, I want to say, somewhere around there. And I just gotten put in my tax paperwork with my guy and all of this stuff. All right. And so, just so you know, I give Uncle Sam a lot of money. All right. They be like, I ain't turned Republican. And that really is a testament to the strength of my character, because it's crossed my mind a couple of times. That first time after I started doing TV and I got one of them checks, I looked at all them deductions. I was like, yo, man, like, I don't even really feel like wow, okay. Anyway, so I'm on the phone with my tax man, minding my own business. And he hits me and says, all right, well, we're done with your taxes. And basically every year, the way we do it, I get zero after do all the allowances, except, all that stuff. But we try to set it up to where at the end of the year, I don't owe them. They don't owe me. Like, the year before that, I had gotten a refund of like $500. Like, that's how we try to do it. Out of nowhere, man, my tax man said to me, again, this is new, like, relatively new on my journey. He's like, okay, cool. He just said, matter of fact, we just got through doing your taxes and looks like you're going to get a refund of $89,000. I said, did you say 89 or 8 or 9? He says, 89. Man, I got that check. I would have got a BMW. That's what I would have got, the BMW. But I had that M4. That was why, because I ain't got that check. And to be honest, it wasn't the smartest purchase I ever made, because I bought it for 72. A year later, I took it back to the dealership for 50. So it wasn't like it was the wisest purchase, but I got my $20,000 worth of that in between year, boy. Woo, man. I remember I drove that car up to Atlanta so my mama could ride, because she, you know, she's like, oh, I learned that my mama likes cars. She's like, yeah, I want to see the car. I want to see the car. So I drove up to Atlanta. Man, I'm in the car with my mama on back roads doing like 75 and a 30. And she ain't complaining once. It's a different 75, though. I'm just showing how that thing swang, how that thing bang, how that thing go. Oh, man, that was great. Anyway, my point is, if somebody had asked me to buy that car via Western Union, I probably wouldn't have.
A lot of times for people, like, a car buying is like a first big purchase that they've ever had to make. I knew a guy in college who tried to buy a new car with his parents' credit card.
Oh, I ain't gonna lie, I tried to buy that card on my credit card. I wanted the points. I wanted the points. Like, I was gonna pay. Like, I clearly, like, dog, can you imagine somebody out of nowhere telling you 89? I really thought he said 8 or 9, because it never dawned on me it could possibly be 89.
Feels like free money, too, right?
Ooh, yeah, even though it's yours. It's money I didn't expect. That's the best way to put it.
All right, so our last dumb purchase with free money comes from Tarika in Michigan.
Back in the day, when I was in college, you know, I used to get refund checks, right? I was, a college athlete, so I had a little scholarship money, so occasionally I would get a refund check. So I remember back in Raleigh, I got a refund check for like 3 racks, right? You couldn't tell me nothing because I had 3 racks. So I got like some school gear, school shirts and stuff, paid a couple bills. I didn't stay on campus, so I paid my rent up for a couple months. I was good. Now, instead of doing the responsible thing, like making sure that everything else, you know, your car or, you know, your parents or anything like that that you needed to take care of, instead of doing that, I decided I wanted to go ball out with my friends. So we hit up this club. I can't remember the name of the club to save my life, but it was on Glenwood Avenue. And I'm in the club balling out, right? Like, I didn't bought the VIP section. I didn't want a little booth. I wanted the big booth, like the 350 booth or whatever. And it was white with the white couch and the carpet and the bottle service. I didn't bought like 3 bottles of Moet. You know, Moet, like $150 a bottle. I'm just out here acting crazy. On top of that, I'm still buying regular drinks. And I was drinking like Hennessy and Patron at the time. So each drink is like $10, $12. I'm just acting a whole fool, right? By the time I leave the club, I done probably spent a good $700 in the club. How about I go outside, because I'm driving this 1993 Grand Prix and my damn car would start. Transmission went out on my whip. I done spent all my money in a club. I don't even got like $50 to get a tow truck right now, because I don't even know what I did with all this money that I thought I brought. So I done had to ask my homegirl, can I borrow like $50 to call the tow truck? I'm too drunk to be embarrassed. I don't know what is going on right now. I'm upset that my car didn't start. But at the same time, I'm too drunk to really realize the situation that I'm in right now. So, needless to say, I never got my transmission fixed on my car. They ended up just junking it or whatnot. But I promise I'll never in my life just go to the club and just spend stupid money for no reason on, like, drinks and a seat.
All right, so fun fact here. What, Tarika has worked on the show for a very long time. I did not realize that she went to college in Raleigh. I'm kicking it on Glenwood South. I know the life that she was out there living, the Hennessy and Patron era. Okay, I see how you was getting down. I see you. And I just had to stake that it all came crashing down at once. Right, the transmission don't work, like right here. And the thing that I had to feel bad for was, if her transmission just went out like that, she knew she had a car where she should have been stacking that money and holding it a little bit tighter, right? Like, the transmission don't go out on your car when everything else is OBKB. That's not really this. I'll tell you this though, that refund check game, because I ain't even know about refund. Like, I grew up in college basically because my parents were professors, but I didn't know much about like the financial aid game and any of that. So I had no idea of the notion of the refund check. I didn't know about that until I got to school. I'll never forget, man. One of my homeboys, he had gotten a job at the movie theater. The movie theater at Lenox. Got a job in the movie theater at Lenox. And he had been going up there, you know, getting a little bread, you know, wasn't like we were studying, you know, so he was just going up there making that happen. He broke his foot one day because something happened and they got bored and they were kicking a closet and they were trying to like kick the door in the closet. And I remember I had to take him to the hospital the next day because I wasn't on campus that night and he had broken his foot. So he got this broken foot, but he's still going to his job or whatever. And then that refund check came in. I think that refund check might have been like $2,500. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember what he did in order. He got that $2,500. He quit his job, bought an ounce of weed, and he ordered a brand new stereo. Those three steps in succession. Like, he had been so broke before that, he'd go check his balance. And, like, I think his bank would let you take out 10. 10 was the smallest increment that you could take out of the ATM at his bank. Because there used to be a bank that let you take out 5. And, you know, when you broke in college, like, the difference between taking out 10 and taking out 5 could be significant. He would go, and we'd just check. He'd be like, oh, still at $2. Well, still at $2. And then he go back and his dad had put some money in up to $22. You know, like we was living the for real struggling in college existence. Man, he got that check. He was like, nah, man, we about to be living, man. He was broke again in like maybe a month.
How did he pay the rent?
It was college. He's in the door.
The way that my financial aid experience worked was my refund checks were to pay expenses like rent and groceries and stuff.
No, so, right. So what he was doing with his refund was it was extra loan money. And so the room and board and tuition had already been paid. And then these are like living accommodations. But like the meal plan has already been paid for. Yeah. So these, in theory, you got food. Like all of that is straight. And again, we just been broke. So he got that refund check and he didn't blow it all. But the first move was, how do I blow some of this money? How do I do that right there? And then, yeah, it was an ounce of weed, it was a brand new stereo, and he quit the job at the movie theater. In retrospect, it probably would have worked out okay if he had kept the job at the movie theater. It was just hard to get there because, again, my man had a broken foot. College, man, learning how to make good decisions typically involves starting off making some bad ones. All right, and ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Bill Bostock of Insider. Check out his story on how United Arab Emirates is moving to a 4.5-day work week at businessinsider.com. Also, thanks to Gwen Aviles of Insider. Check out her story about how the pandemic has affected workers of color and how the great resignation ain't for everybody at insider.com. And also, thanks to Steven Zaitchik of The Washington Post. Check out his story on 3D advertisements at washingtonpost.com. All right, remember, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. In our next episode, we're going to play an oldie but goodie for you that a lot of you guys probably haven't heard yet, which is an interview we did in 2018 with Rasheed Wallace, right when The Right Time became a podcast. Be sure to check that out. Enjoy yourselves. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.